Welcome back to Startup to Success on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
And so if possible, you try not to be just an isolated person out there without any contact with other people in the industry. If you're working with a distributor, that distributor would have all of that information, but you might not necessarily want to pay a distributor 20% just to get the information. So knowing people, having friends, knowing somebody in the industry, or sometimes if you just call on Sprouts, you may say, you know, before I call on you, do you have some basic forms? And very often they will say, please fill out these forms and bring them in, and then you can call on us. So it could just be an assistant at the Sprouts office that can send you that material, and maybe some of you can then call back and ask questions. And it could even be going into a Sprouts store and talking to the store manager there, and he may give you access or tell you who might help you with that. Some people, you might go to that guy and he won't give you, doesn't want to give you a second, but you'll find a friendly face and that person may give you some information and some names. So if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be entrepreneurial. You've got to develop a network of people to help get you this kind of information.
My next question is about the food shows. Obviously, due to the pandemic, a lot of the shows have been paused, or maybe, I don't know, I'm not quite sure how they're still going, whether they're online or they're just completely on hold. But once things get back to normal and food shows are back on, do you suggest for a newer brand or my brand, for example, to go and attend some of these food shows?
Well, there are two words to that. One is to attend, and the other is to actually have a booth. Now, I do know that the fancy food show in New York is planning to actually open again in the fall. It used to be in June, but they're planning to do it in late September. And of course, I don't know what's happening in California, but there's the natural food show, and there are some big natural food shows that normally occur in California in January. They may or may not occur, but if they don't occur this January, they'll occur within the next year. So, and again, if you're a manufacturer, if you have certain contacts, you can get into those shows inexpensively. Otherwise, you may have to pay $100 or $150 to attend. But just going to the show and circulating and talking to people in the aisles and talking to people at the booths and seeing the products, and many of them also have very interesting seminars and instructional programs that are loaded with information. So just doing that by itself is of value. And again, it might cost you $100 or $200 to attend, plus the flight and plus the hotel room, but it's a manageable expense even for a small business. The next step is, are you doing well enough that you can actually buy a booth at the show? And I think outside of the natural food show in California, there's a smaller show even outside that's a little less expensive, but the biggest shows could cost you $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 to have a booth. And you'd have to decide whether or not that fits your budget. You can also sometimes partner and have your products displayed by a distributor or maybe even another manufacturer. You can combine with some other manufacturers. So suddenly the $6,000 becomes $2,000. But I think the first thing you'd want to do is absolutely attend those shows. And you may also be able to start developing a network at the New York show. There might be 2,000 booths, and I would normally go by every one of them. Some of them are big people, but of those 2,000 booths, if you can find 5 or 10 or 15 friendly faces and people that you have a rapport with, there are people you can talk to, you can help them, they can help you. And now you're starting to network and become an insider in the industry instead of an outsider who doesn't know anything about the industry.
Got it. So I think I did plan to attend last year's natural show in California, but it did end up being, I think it was rescheduled, and then the prices were up from like $100 to like $300. It was crazy. I don't know exactly what ended up happening, but I ended up not going. But so in terms of sharing a booth, that's something I have been thinking about because I don't need much space. I have 11 products, and honestly, a tiny section on a table would do for me. So I've been thinking about reaching out to some of the other non-competing brands that I could possibly partner with and just pitch them the idea and saying, hey, can I take a little bit of a section in your booth? But if I do, and if they they ask me, well, you know, what's your budget? What would be a budget range that I should think of when I'm approaching them?
Well, again, it depends on the size of your business. As I said, and again, I don't know exactly what the rates are in California, but many booths, the full booth could be, you know, $4,000 to $6,000. And again, that's just the cost of the booth space. Then you have to fill the booth, and they charge you for electrical services and cleanup services and this and that and the other things. So if you take a portion of it, maybe you can knock the cost down to $1,000 to $2,000. And again, the key there is that many of these shows, on the positive end, if you can get one new big account from a show, it can pay for the whole show if you're ready to take on that account. If you're a large enough company that a 300 chain store you can handle, that's why those shows can be worthwhile. But you really have to gauge that based on your business itself. If your business only has a whole budget of $10,000 or $20,000 or something like that, even $2,000 or $3,000 of expense for a show can be overwhelming. So you really have to try to tie it in with the state of your business. And there are ways, there can be shortcuts where if you know somebody that's a supermarket, they might have an extra tag, or frankly, some people, they usually won't do that. These aren't things that are even are proper, but someone's leaving the show and they're not going to be back at the show again, and they've got their tag on, and you borrow the tag. But I'm sort of suggesting things now that aren't really, really legal, but I'm saying that there are shortcuts that people sometimes do to avoid spending $200 or $300 or $400 when they just want to be at a show for a few hours.
Thank you. That's great advice. And I think the point you made was just get in, start networking, and become an insider. I think that's going to be the key, because from the outside, you can research as much as you can, but at the end of the day, you need to be present, and that rapport is important. What about in terms of outreach to some of these buyers? For example, you know, if I didn't have my friend who connected me with the buyer from Sprouts, and I wanted to get into Sprouts, what's the best way, other than the store manager, approaching the store manager and seeing if they could possibly connect me or give me the information? Do you think LinkedIn or any other way, via email or phone calls, is a good way to go? Or is there a different strategy to it?
Well, obviously, all of the networking things may work if you have any friend. I mean, you can certainly simply call Sprouts and say, I have a product so-and-so, can I get an appointment? And they may say yes. They may say, well, we're about 8 months away. They may say, send us samples, and I'll have the buyer look at it, and the buyer may look at those samples and decide if he wants to see you. But you can succeed, you know, by just blindly sending stuff in, and I've done that many times. I mean, the other ways, if you really want to get into account, there could be a distributor or a broker that's very tight with those accounts, and sometimes people will hire those people just to get in because they know that broker, you know, has huge ins. But then you have to decide, I will then now pay the broker, say 5% of my sales, maybe, you know, and of course those broker accounts can be canceled usually on a 30-day basis, but I'll be locked in for a period of time paying him that, or this distributor is going to get his 20 or 30%, but he's the only way to get in. So those would be other ways to get in. But as I say, you simply can, you know, contact the account, send them some samples. They may like them. They may give you an appointment, and you can just go in without having, you know, some special entree if your product is good enough and unique enough. And of course, if your product becomes successful, they'll start calling you looking for the product, and it turns around the other way.
And if the broker route is the route that I end up going with, what's the best way to find the broker and really confirm that they do have the connections that they're saying they do?
Well, of course, you know, there are some large brokers, and you can go to their website and look them up. The problem with the brokers and distributors is that they tend to push the things that get them volume, and they're not as interested in developing new products unless they see that it's something so special and unique that they're extremely excited about it. So the best thing, again, is personal contact. If you have a broker and there's a person there where you know them, that they'll be straight with you, there's a better chance that you won't be lost in the shuffle. So either have a contact, or possibly your product is so compelling and revolutionary and everybody likes it and so trendy that they're interested in it based on itself. But these brokers and distributors can sometimes carry thousands of items. So it's very easy to get lost in the shuffle and be frustrated. And in many cases, they're really expecting you to do a lot of the trailblazing work of getting the product into the stores.
Wow, good one. And then do you recommend we check the references in general, just like maybe get, is that something common that we could do, where we can ask, hey, tell us what other brands you work with, and then, you know, contact those brands and see how their experience with the broker or the distributor has been.
Well, if you're a friend of the guy that you're calling, maybe he would respond to you. But if I was simply a distributor, if I was simply a manufacturer and somebody out of the blue asked me how good a particular distributor is, I would not be really interested in responding to them. You're just another competitor. There's no benefit to me. So it, again, it would really have to be a contact if you knew somebody that would be willing to respond to you. But just to blindly call up a manufacturer of a product and say, can you tell me how good your distributor is in such a market? I think they'd laugh you off the phone, frankly.
That's good to know. My last question is, in terms of selling online, I've noticed this huge change in a lot of the brands going direct to consumer, sort of cutting out the retailers, and a lot of them obviously had financial difficulties. That's what forced them to make this move. But then a lot of other brands are realizing that, hey, if you can sell directly to the consumer from your website or through marketplaces like Amazon, Walmart, and other places, you could potentially make more profit. And I wanted to know what your thoughts are. Is that something that, you know, a new brand should think about versus going through this, I'm going to call it a challenge, because it is a challenge to get into a huge industry like, you know, the supermarket space and the food industry. I find it easier, at least for me, to figure out how to sell it online versus trying to get into Sprouts.
Look, a lot of companies now, a lot of small companies have started their business by selling online. I don't want to diminish the fact that it's very competitive and it's challenging, just like, you know, going to GoFundMe is great if you can get it, but you have to be smart and aggressive to do that. So it is a great way to start your business. It takes its work. It has its challenges, and that can then give you the initial manufacturing and you get you into production. Then you can then take the next step of going to these stores, and you can even base it on your online sales. And then sometimes the challenge would be to try to convert those sales into the supermarket, because the supermarket will only keep your product as long as it shows proper movement. But I probably even should have mentioned in the beginning that one good way of developing your product, besides the small store and the farmer's market and the town fairs that happen in the falls and things like that, would be to try to sell it online. But again, you need to be very aggressive in your online marketing. You've got to have a really good site. You've got to get it onto the eyeballs of people, and maybe try to get preferences with Google ads and this and that, or by blogging, by getting people's attention, by word of mouth, spreading with friends and getting mailing lists that you can keep plugging in. And clearly there are businesses that have made a start and gotten sales up to $500,000 or $1 million and maybe even more through this method, but it takes a lot of work and time. And it is a competitive place to do it, but it clearly is the way a lot of small food manufacturers are also getting their starts.
Got it. And finally, I do want to start the tea. I know we've been talking about this for a while now. And I think where I'm a little confused, and I probably asked you this question before, but I'm going to ask you again, because I would love for my listeners to know, in terms of just understanding what, if there are any rules or regulations about a certain product, like for example, tea, is there a place, a website, or some kind of a government entity that we could go to just understand what are the guidelines we need to follow when we're making a product like a tea?
Well, you can start with you know, you have the FDA, you have your state and your national organizations. You also have organizations of tea manufacturers that you can look at. And you can also get a lot by just Googling on the web and look up T regulations, and you may find a bunch of sites, and you may even find some experts that know things. You might find some dissertations about the latest in T rules. So it's really a combination of going to the state organizations, and some of them will respond, and some of them have websites that will refer to your answer. Again, possibly the FDA as well. But very often you will find some T organizations that have their own publications or information that you might be able to access without necessarily being a member of that. And also, you know, as just generally Googling the topic and the subject. And I think, as we all know, if you really attack your computer, there's quite an extensive amount of information you can get. You can sometimes possibly, you know, go to a research librarian that may help you. But you also can be talking to, there are food scientists that may help, that you can talk initially. There are organizations that are in food development that may give you some initial free discussion. Some of the kitchens have their own little blogs and information. And then it also comes down to if you know people that are in the tea industry or are scientists. And if another one which could be helpful are various universities. A number of universities in the different states have agricultural departments and have departments that are geared toward food, where they're accessible to people. Sometimes they run programs and seminars, which you may have to pay for. Other times they may just give you some free information or free references. And all of these things in combination would probably unlock what the issues are legally and technically about your tea relating to shelf life or safety or anything else you're looking for.
And then in terms of the label, the nutritional value, I'm sure we can Google this too and find out, but is there a specific place that we need to go to get that information properly printed out?
Well, one advantage under the federal laws, up to $50,000, and even if your company is less than $500,000, as far as the government is concerned, the nutritional labeling is not necessarily required. If you want to get into a particular supermarket, they may have a requirement on that. You theoretically can come up with the nutritional information yourself by analyzing what ingredients you're putting in, knowing what the caloric contents are of them, and doing that. And then you also, but it can cost, you can go to labs, which is the way a big company would do. They would send the product to the lab, and the lab would do an analysis and then give you that nutritional breakdown. And again, they might charge a few hundred dollars. I'm not sure exactly what the charge would be, but if you have 5 or 10 products, obviously the cost would go up, but that would be the most official way of getting the information. And those companies would also then give you a nutritional label. But again, you may be paying $500 plus for each of those, or you'd have to see and negotiate what you would do to get those. So they're readily available. It's really a matter of how much you have to pay for them, and are you selling enough that it's reasonable for you to pay that to really get on a big scale and have that done for yourself.
Awesome. Robert, thank you so much. I still have so many questions that I would love to ask you, but we are getting close to an end, and maybe I'll bring you back again. I'll hopefully be in phase 2, and then I can ask a lot more complicated questions next time. But thank you for all your help and sharing your wisdom and giving us actionable tips as to how we can move forward if we have an idea for a product or a drink or whatever it may be in the food industry. Thank you. And we appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining Startup to Success with Maria on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com.